Hello and welcome to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. I'm your host, Rachel Zimmerman. Thank you so much for tuning in this weekend. Hope you had an amazing week. I am really excited about this week's episode. We're just going to get straight into the interview. Michelle Lee dropped by the studio to talk to me. You know her from Today in St. Louis, News Channel 5. Maybe you know her from the Very Asian Foundation. It was really, really cool getting to know Michelle, and I hope you'll enjoy the interview as much as I did. Let's get right into it. I'm so happy to welcome Michelle Lee to the Rachel Zimmerman Show. Michelle, thank you so much for coming down. This is awesome. It's really great to meet you.
Thank you for having me. And plus, I like your office.
It It's we've got some good digs down here.
Yeah.
No, it's just great to see you. I watch you and Rennie in the morning all the time. And he was on the show back in like November. And I told him, I'm like, I feel like I already know you just because you're on my TV in my home. I'm sure you get that all the time. But
I love Rennie. And he's a ding dong. I can say that. Oh my gosh, I shouldn't say that. No, I love him. He's like a big brother that you didn't want.
That you didn't want.
No, I'm just kidding.
All right, so you have won a Peabody. You've won 4 National Murrows, 9 Regional Emmys, among other awards. So it's really my honor to host you here today on my show. Let's get started by talking about how you became interested in journalism, anchoring. How did you get into it?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I'm not a good person in the sense of like, this was my dream. I had a microphone. I really thought that I was just going to do something in communication. I didn't know what that looked like. But I took a reporting class and fell in love with it, and then fell in love with the principles of journalism, you know, like telling the stories of marginalized communities, you know, making change in your neighborhood or in the law, you know, those holding people accountable is so important. So that's what led me to journalism. And then it was just, I try to tell this to students, you know, it's like sometimes it's just putting one foot in front of the other. Like, I'm going to send out some tapes, see what happens. Oh, I got that job. Okay, I'm going to see if I get another job, you know, and it kind of snowballed into a career. But, you know, I don't know. I just like communicating with people and meeting people.
You hear that all the time from people. They're like, it wasn't my thing. And then I took a class and I fell in love.
Yeah.
And that's just been so many people's story. It's really interesting to hear, though, that wasn't like on your radar because you are so natural at what you do. And just watching you on TV and watching you interact on social media, too. I mean, it's just very seamless.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, of course. Okay. So how did you end up landing in St. Louis?
St. Louis. So I grew up in Missouri, but on the other side of the state. And my husband grew up in St. Louis. And I was always like, are we going to make it back to St. Louis or Kansas City? That was always kind of the goal. But we were living in Seattle a couple of years ago. And everything kind of fell apart during the pandemic. It was really kind of overwhelming and sad. You know, Seattle was the first city to have a known case of COVID. So everything shut down immediately. My job changed. The show that I was anchoring was put on hiatus. My daycare shut down. And then my mom here in Missouri died unexpectedly. Oh. So it was just like, what are we doing out here? You know, we're like living in this 900 square foot house. No offense to 900 square foot houses, but it was just so such a tiny spot. We had a growing family and we were like, let's get home because it's too much, you know. So it kind of came at an exciting time, but a sad time, too,
right.
You know. But it was nice to be back near family.
What's your favorite part about living in the Lou?
Oh, my gosh. The food is great. The people are sweet. And also the convenience. I know that sounds so crazy, but it's like I love being able to not hit traffic,
right.
You know, or just like barely traffic. I love the Cardinals. That is no joke. I mean, that is for real. And so it's just really fun to be in a town that is so, I don't know, like, I don't want to say like utopic about it, but you know, a big sports town
right.
is really fun.
Yeah, and it feels like St. Louis is like a really big, small town at the end of the day. Like, everybody knows each other. The traffic thing is such a great point because if I hit traffic at all, I'm like, duh, traffic. And then I have to tell myself, like, other people deal with this 10 times every day.
Well, the greatest thing is that people will be like, oh, you have to pay for parking here. And I'm like, it's $5
right.
a day, you know, whereas, you know, if you've ever lived somewhere else, sometimes it's like, wait, it's $80 for this, you know, so
yeah.
it's the convenience is unbeatable. And then this is a really wonderful place to raise a family. I take my kid everywhere. So it's, I think that's a really special part about St. Louis.
So let's talk about the Very Asian Foundation. That's the main reason I wanted to get you on the show. Let's talk about the voicemail that started it all for my listeners who haven't heard the story.
Okay. So on New Year's Day, 2022, I was talking about what Americans eat and why on New Year's Day. And it's one of those stories, it's like a throwaway. I hate to say throwaway because my boss would not appreciate that. But, you know, it was like 20 seconds. And it was like, you know, Americans eat greens for wealth, you know, pork for progress. The very end, I just said, and I had dumpling soup because that's what a lot of Korean people do. I dumbed that majorly down because it's really rice cake soup. It's called, you know, dukguk. It's like all these different things. But I just said dumpling soup. And so I had a really nice shout out for some people because maybe they are like, I remember specifically a guy named Jim was like, my wife grew up in Korea and our daughter's making that soup for the first time. So
cool
shout out, you know, and I was like, oh, yeah, Jim. I'm guessing Jim's not Korean, you know. But then a woman called a little bit later and said that she was like, your Asian anchor was talking about what Asian people eat. And I kind of take offense to that because what if a white person talked about what they ate? They would be fired. She was just being very Asian. She needs to keep her Korean to herself and talk about what white people. I mean, it just kind of went on and on. And so I shared that voicemail and it definitely changed my life because it went viral all around the world. My friend ended up making very Asian shirts and we sold them to like Australia, Japan, China, Korea, Germany, Holland, Switzerland. I mean, it was just insane. And it was funny because we would see very Asian shirts in the Bronx and it was the same order in Arkansas. You know,
oh, wow.
I was like, oh, wow. So then we raised money and we gave that to the Asian American Journalists Association. I went on the Ellen show. Ellen gave me $15,000. And at that time, I had already met with people in the community. At the time, it was Alex Lee from the Asian American Chamber of Commerce. And he said, what do you want to do with this moment? And I said, I don't know. It just happened. But he was like, if you want, I think you should think about, you know, starting a nonprofit. And so that's where we are today.
I'm curious about the decision to share the voicemail, because a lot of the wisdom you get from people is like, oh, if you get any hate, yes, just ignore it. But obviously something was on your heart that you needed to share that.
You know, I think for me, because I was like, God, I just came back to my home state and I had only been in the state for maybe 6 to 7 months, you know, and growing up here, I loved Missouri, like loved my childhood, loved being in like rural Missouri, too. You know, so like not only was I in the Midwest, like a proud Midwest and Missouri girl, I was also like a country girl. Like we literally would go to bonfires on the weekends, jump hay bales, go hunting and fishing, you know, like all these things. But I never felt like other people saw me as a Missourian. And then when I got into this business, people would say things like, you're not going to have a career unless you go on the West Coast. Mm. And I was like, but I really want to be in Kansas City or St. Louis. And never could get my resume taken seriously. And there was at some point when I knew I was ready. Like, I'm not, you know, when you just know, like, okay, but I'm ready for this. Like, mm-hmm. this is weird. So, you know, like I changed my name because I'm an adoptee, by the way. So I'm the only Asian person in my family. I changed my name back to a Korean name for On Air, which a lot of people do for pen names, so it's not a big deal. Finally got out to the West Coast and just felt like I was hitting a stride. And so that was really telling to me. And then when the pandemic happened, I mean, gosh, that was so abrupt and traumatic. And then with the loss of my mom. So, you know, came home and kind of, you know, was a little depressed about it because I wanted to be home, but like I wasn't going to be home with my mom, you know. And anyway, so it was just a difficult time. And, you know, to have this transition, like to come back and just hear that, like right out the gate,
right.
I was kind of like, you know what? This is crazy to me. Like, how many years do I have to be in Missouri? How many times do I have to say, I actually like Missouri? I want to stay here. I want to be here for someone to believe me that I belong here. And I know that sounds kind of dramatic, but, you know, that's how I was feeling at the time. Mm-hmm. Plus, it was like the pandemic. So I had been doing stories on literally like kids going to the grocery store and getting called bat eaters, you know, or go back to your country. And the kids are like, I was born in St. Louis, right. You know, and just the damage that we saw with so many young people was really eye opening and scary for some people, you know. So I just shared that voicemail and I didn't think about it. Like I was kind of like, yes. You know? And then like you think the same 10 people are going to interact with your stuff.
Right.
And so then when it went viral, I was like, oh my God, this is when I'm going to get fired. Like, this is, I have done it. You know, I have really done it. And to my surprise, you know, and really nice surprise, like KSDK and Tegna were so supportive. Mm. And I've never experienced that, you know. And then the way St. Louis showed up was so heartwarming and tremendous. Like, it just, it also pulled me out of that feeling of, gosh, did I make a weird decision to come back home. You know, like, St. Louis has been so wonderful, and it just reiterates that I'm in the right place.
So when you initially shared that voicemail, you just let it speak for itself. You were just, you know, kind of, you know, your face was saying it all, but like, you didn't say anything.
Right.
But you reacted to that with so much grace and kindness, I feel like.
Wow.
Well, also like standing strong and being like, okay, I'm sharing this though, but I'm still going to react. I'm not going to, for instance, you didn't name the lady. You didn't like hang her out. You know, you gave her a chance. From what I understand, you talked to her after the fact.
I did. And, you know, I don't believe in cancel culture because, oh my gosh, we would all be canceled at some point in our lives. And we all have to, you can't, you know, do better until you make a mistake, right? So I didn't feel like that was worth her livelihood. But yeah, I wanted to share it because I'm like, this is the kind of stuff, basically in my mind, I was thinking, this is the kind of stuff that people have to put up with, you know? And it's actually not just like Asian people or something, but it's like women, their weight, their hair, you know what I mean? Like, you hear it all. So yeah, I don't know. You know, I just felt like I needed to protect her, especially after it went viral, because I thought this is the kind of stuff that gets scary for people, because it was scary for me. You would think that it would be like this really wonderful moment, but it was actually so anxiety inducing because I thought, I'm going to lose my job. My kid's going to get, you know, said someone's going to say something to my kid. You know, someone's going to find a picture. You know, you just start thinking like all these weird things, like a picture of my child. I mean, you know, because I put my kid on the internet all the time. And my husband's like, you got to stop doing that at some point. So, but yeah, you know, I just felt like, it was a win-win-win. She got to hopefully keep her identity. We got to share, like, yes, this kind of stuff still happens. And then we got to have a foundation and this wonderful platform to do good work, hopefully.
Where does that bravery to put yourself out there and take those risks that you take, where does that come from?
I didn't think about it as bravery. I would say just, honestly, Midwest grit. And that sounds so cheesy, too. But like, my parents were like laborers, you know, and like, I remember my mom, she would teach me so much about like working life. You know, if she didn't like something, she would stand up for herself. And then I remember one time, because she did odd jobs. My dad was a construction worker and my mom did odd jobs all through life. And I remember she was working at an insurance company and the guy, her boss, this is like in Clinton, Missouri, you know, it was like, you need to pick up my dry cleaning. And so she did it a few times, but then, like, she's an insurance agent, you know? And finally she said, I'm not doing it anymore. And the guy was like, well, if you want to work here, then you're going to pick up my dry cleaning. And my mom said, well, then you're going to have to fire me. And so he fired her, and then she got, you know, unemployment for like 6 months. So that's the kind of stuff my mom and dad did, you know, all the time. They stood their ground in their, you know, in their jobs. And I don't think that they ever thought that they had careers. You know, I was the first generation college student. So we always had to work hard for what we had and stand our ground on our principles. That doesn't mean that we didn't work hard and do and follow rules either. My parents were really good rule followers. I think I am too most of the time. But, but you know, like, I just think that we have to stand up for who we are as people.
Let's talk a little bit about the power of social media, because obviously this foundation sprung from this social media moment. How do you integrate that into what you do every day?
Social media?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there were times when I was really drinking the Kool-Aid on social media. You know, this is probably like 15, 20 years ago. And now I feel like social media is such a tool in many ways, but also has been such a hindrance, you know, and even myself finding, you know, this space because of this viral moment. Also finding myself like really suffering mental health wise because I'm on social media all the time. Mm. You know, you kind of have FOMO too in some of these spaces, like who got invited to this and that and who's doing that and why can we do that? You know, and I just have to shut it off because at the end of the day, like, I'm here to do a service for the community. You know, I mean, that's really how I see journalism. And I'm really trying to do the best I can just to lighten someone's day, to inform them, you know, give them something that they can laugh at or learn from and move on. And when I read comments or when I go into my DMs, I'm like, oh, why did I do that? You know, so what is the word I'm looking for? Like a mixed bag for me. I don't know how that is for you.
Well, I was going to say it's honestly comforting to hear that you have those same kind of struggles with social media, because I mean, I'm the same way. I get FOMO. I get like, oh, I don't have enough followers, or why didn't this work out the way it was supposed to? But then there is the power of like, yeah, you're getting your message out there. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
Yeah. And what if it impacts like one person, you know, then in a really meaningful way, then isn't that worth it?
Right.
And I will say this. So, you know, I used to experiment on social media, and when Google Plus was like the thing for like a second, I had 700,000 followers on it.
Wow.
But you know what? What it taught me was that the algorithm is fake, you know, in many ways, because it's like they were pushing out news people, you know, on Google Plus. And then at the end of the day, when they decide it's over, it's just gone. Poof. So there goes all my followers and all that work that I had done to get those followers, all the hours that I was missing with my husband, you know, all the content creation that I was making was gone. Like, you know, just because they said, we're not going to invest in this platform anymore. And so I think about that sometimes when there's so many content creators putting their heart and soul into every single platform, but it can be gone in an instant. And then where's your real life? You know, so that's what I try to remind myself of.
I think about that when people discuss the TikTok ban and all these people who have built their careers on that. It's like, what if that goes away? I will say you had, it was several weeks ago, but you did like a get ready with me, like doing your hair. And I was like, this is my type of content.
Oh,
like,
it is?
I love a get ready with me. And I was like, I have to tell her that I enjoyed that video so much.
Well, it's like chaos. If you ever go into a dressing room, you know, before the show, before the newscast, it's chaos because everyone is on deadline, right?
Yeah.
So it's a mess.
Well, it was funny because you were like, I start this at like 53 and I'm done by 56. I'm like, wow, like you just know exactly like the amount of time you have to get it done. I love like all of those get ready with me videos, especially in a news setting.
Gosh.
Like those hit for me for sure. Okay, Michelle, how do you balance mom life and boss lady news anchor life?
Oh my gosh, boss lady news anchor. I don't. You know, so here's the thing. Like, I really don't believe in balance at all. And I know that sounds crazy because what I really think it is an intersection. Because if a source calls me or someone wants me to do something and it's at 7 o'clock at night, I'm there, you know? So I have to say, okay, buddy, like go play on this and I'm going to be right back, you know? And if I need to cut out of work a little bit early because I have to go see my son, you know, swim or something, you know, then I usually do it. I mean, you know, if it works. And then I always say my boss, my supervisor, they're always so great. But like, you know, they always say, okay, you're a mom first, 100%, until the arch falls, you know, and then you're like, we got to have you here. We got to have you here for X, Y, and Z. So I always say, you know, it's not really a balance. It's more of an intersection because I don't get to say 9 to 5, I'm this person, and 6 to 10, I'm this person, you know? So I just feel like it has to be all encompassing all the time. And some days are better than others. You know, if you catch me like at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I might be like in tears because I'm like, I didn't get a nap, you know? But I just try. I feel like every day you just have to show up, you know, and try.
I feel like morning people are just built different. What time do you get up in the morning?
Well, I say 2:30, but then it's like 2:30, 2:45, 3 o'clock. My 3 o'clock is like my, oh, crap.
Yeah.
You know, like, you got to get up and get out the door.
What's your like nighttime and morning routine like?
Oh, it's crazy. So, you know, in the morning, I go straight into work. I meet with my producers. Our producers are telling us, okay, here's what we're working on today. Here's what we're doing. Then I go back, I write stories. And then at 4:30 on the dot, I have to get into like, you know, the dressing room to like put on the Spanx, get on the wires, you know, like all those things. And then we do the show. After the show, you know, then there's like other things to do, like cut-ins, you know, taping intros or writing a story or logging sound, you know, so you're busy doing all those things. And then as soon as I leave, I go home. I try to do something like either it's make dinner, start on dinner, or like take a walk or something so that I feel like I'm moving my body or being productive, usually a nap, pick up my son, then it's, you know, dinner time or extracurricular. Like tonight we have an extracurricular right after summer camp, and then bath and bedtime. So it's a lot, you know, as a mom, it's just like all day, basically.
Tell me a little bit about your teammates on Today in St. Louis. You said Rennie is like the big brother you didn't want.
I'm just kidding. You know, because he gives me so much grief. But I really love Rennie. Like, I don't think that any of my former co-anchors are going to hear this, but you never know. Rennie is my favorite of all time. He is so kind, intelligent, funny, goofy. Like, he can let himself be silly and... like he's confident enough to be around that. You know, like some people wouldn't be like that. He also will give you space and try to uplift you, you know? And I just think that that is so powerful as a colleague, as a human, and also just as a co-anchor, because I feel like you have to be able to have that trust, you know? And the same with Paul and Anthony. Like, Anthony is so funny behind the scenes. He's also funny on television, but we're in the same boat in many ways because we're parents, you know, of young kids. And so it's just kind of funny to commiserate with him on parenthood stuff, but super kind. And then Paul, oh my gosh, he's like the funniest, sweetest, honest person. And I feel like he has strength in his vulnerabilities too, because he'll tell you about the things, his life experiences, and very open about it, and also like how he has overcome some challenges. And there's just something really brilliant about the way he thinks. I don't know. So, I mean, I just respect all of them so much. And then, of course, our whole team. Like, our whole team is really amazing. And I feel like we've come to a point where we all really have, you know, hit this, like, stride, like, this groove. Like, we like each other. I mean, not that we didn't before, but, you know, like, we actually, like and respect each other and like the way the show's going. And I don't know, that's special.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people see it, you know, I don't know how, it, like, you know, what's the return on it. But for us, like, we know how special it is to actually get along and to work well together and have the same kind of mission. And each of us have, like, our own roles and duties for the show. So it just feels great. I don't know how to explain it. You know, it just feels great.
I'm glad that it also seems like you all like are able to be present and be like, oh, this is really special. Because I think sometimes things are just going well and it's like, yeah, it's going well. But I love that you're able to appreciate it while it's happening. That's
cool. Yeah, because, you know, in any newsroom in general, it can be toxic, right? I mean, any job can be. But I think when you're dealing with egos, you know, personalities, sometimes you're like, wow, okay. And I've definitely worked with people where I'm like, I don't really like this person at all, but I can do it on air and smile and whatever. And that is not the case. You know, may lightning strike me, you know, I mean, we really do feel that and appreciate that and share that with each other. You know, like, I really love working with you. I really like this. I really like what you did today. You know, that is 100% special.
I think that really shines through in your broadcast too.
Oh, great.
One other thing I wanted to talk to you about is volunteering with adoptive families and orphanages. Tell me about that.
I used to do that a lot. I'm actually doing that this summer in Dallas just because of some childhood connections that I have.
Okay.
You know, I've always been an adoptee who has, really enjoyed my experience as an adoptee. Now, a lot of things have changed over the years in the sense of like the conversations and the narratives that adoptees have about, you know, should I have been adopted? Were my parents equipped? You know, all these things. But I really enjoyed my childhood. It wasn't perfect, but I did a lot of volunteering for Korean heritage camps with adoption agencies. And at one point, I would go to Korea and bring babies back to the U.S. Now, I don't think I would do that now, given like the way it's kind of seen, you know. But like at the time, it was really, I mean, I was like 18, 22, 24, you know, and it was at the time it was really fulfilling for me. And I saw how it fulfilled other families and enjoyed it quite a bit. And I still think there's something special about getting adoptive families together because it's not like I can't necessarily, as a child, remember a time where I connected with Korean Americans, but I connect, or Korean Koreans, but I connected really well with adoptees, so that, you know, I could see another kid who was Korean, but who had white parents, you know, and then we could make connections that way or jokes that way or whatever, you know. And so that was really special and empowering. And what you see with a lot of adoptees is that just builds confidence. And so hopefully, you know, as kids, as teenagers, they become better adults, right? I mean, it's all about confidence. And so I really liked giving back in that way, not necessarily to impose any opinions about adoption, but just to say, like, I'm here, you know, mm-hmm. like, I'm here for you. You don't have to talk about adoption or not. We can just go shopping. You know, that's what I would do with some of the teenage girls and stuff. So I did like Korean heritage camps. I did birthland tours. And then I would do just, you know, kind of like glorified babysitting.
And you won an award from Congress, the Angels in Adoption Award.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, that was 2010. And that was when I was actually in Southwest Missouri. So at the time it was then Congressman Roy Blunt, who because he has a son who was adopted. But I just thought that was really special. And I just think that there's so much discussion about adoption. I'm always afraid to like say the wrong thing. But nonetheless, when we look at children, you know, I think that you have to work for children.
Absolutely. When you walked in, Michelle, you were telling me about this story you had been working on recently about renaming 8th Street because of Chinatown.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about that.
So excited about this. So, you know, as a journalist, I feel like if there was anything that you could bring up to, you know, bring attention to make change, I think it's great. It's kind of weird in the sense of like it's a little different. But we've just done a lot of stories on Chinatown, its existence in St. Louis. There was like a cemetery, Valhalla Cemetery, that has like, you know, Chinese markers from like 100 years ago.
Wow.
And that's because the Chinese, you know, back then could not be buried. Like people did not want them in the cemeteries. So there were people who had to like make a deal, you know, to get this back half of Valhalla for these plots. And so what if, you know, there's a group called the Asian American Civic Scholars. They're all high schoolers. They like go out and they preserve the graves, clean the graves, you know, try to raise awareness of it. But then also the Chinatown that was here in 1869 and lasted until 1966. So almost 100 years.
Wow.
And so many people don't remember that it existed. And I think, how sad is that, that you could have a century's worth of history and no one know about it? And also, I think when you do learn about it, you look at St. Louis a little differently, like, oh, there was a place for Asians, you know, or St. Louis was a beacon of light for so many Chinese migrants who were not having success in California because of discrimination, eventually exclusion laws, you know, the railroads were so hard. So people came to St. Louis at a time when Union Station had like 100,000 people coming through every day, you know, so it was like this new beginning. And also, I think what's really cool is the first Chinese like migrant on record was like a 20-something-year-old named Ala Lee. He was the only Chinese guy in St. Louis in 1857 is when he came. So pre-Civil War, ended up marrying an Irish woman. And so, you know, if you think about like, you know, interracial marriage or like, you know, and they had several children, by the way, too. So it's just like this building community outside of your community, whether it's necessity or not, I think is kind of cool, because you would think that like, some of the narratives are like Asian people don't exist in the Midwest, or Asian people don't have history here. And that's not the case. You know, not only did they have history here, but also they were building, you know, community outside of their own lived experiences. And so anyway, long story short, we made this aware to Alderwoman Kara Spencer, who now, you know, has downtown as part of her district. And I said, you know, there are a lot of groups out here like OCA, St. Louis, you know, the Asian American Civic Scholars, the Missouri History Museum and the Missouri Historical Society have been doing so much research. And so they would like to see something happen, you know. And Kara Spencer was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's, you know, so I was like, oh, gosh. So I felt like it was a great like way for community and journalism to connect. Mm-hmm. And then also this renaming of 8th Street. So Chinatown was between Walnut and Market, 7th and 8th. It's where basically the Spire building is right across from Busch Stadium. And people lived there. They worked there. Like 60% of the city's laundry was done there, you know, by Chinese laundry services. And so there was so much like innovation in farming. Just a lot of cool stories. So basically to rename just in honor, like an honorary, oh my gosh, my words are escaping me. Honorarily renaming 8th Street to An Liang Way, because An Liang means peace and benevolence, but it was also a laborers and merchants association that helped the people who worked in Chinatown, but also was really a gathering space and hosted like national conventions here in St. Louis. So to just have that name recognition is exciting. And the mayor still has to sign off on it, by the way. So, I mean, I guess there's a chance that she wouldn't, but I don't think so. But, you know, I think that there are a lot of neighborhoods that were lost during this urban renewal time frame. You know, we look at Mill Creek Valley. We understand a little bit more about how that, you know, came about and how that was lost. And so I think it would be great to learn also more about Chinatown. So, and also, when I tell young people this, and I've said this on the news, when I tell young people, like, hey, there was a Chinatown before the Civil War in St. Louis, people go, like, kids will be like, wow, I had no idea. You know, that, and I've heard this firsthand from young people who say, that changes the way I see myself in St. Louis.
Wow.
You know, and in a city where we want people to stay and grow and have pride in it, you know, I think that's really special.
That is really special. Thank you for sharing that, yeah. Michelle. It's been so great talking to you and just getting to know who you are, all these things that you are involved in and passionate about. If people want to get involved with the Very Asian Foundation, how can they do that?
Very easy. VeryAsianFoundation.org, or, you know, you can just email us. The information's on the website. But yeah, we would love to have volunteers for sure. I mean, really, I just want to get people engaged in journalism and civic journalism, and, you know, and finding ways to do things that speak to them, speak to their heart, you know, build community. You don't have to be very Asian. I mean, that's the joke, right? Because I'm the only Asian person in my family. But, you know, we have currency on the way we look. So, but yeah, I feel like if you want to volunteer, you can. Great. Or just come to one of our things. You know, we had Shannon Lee come in of the Bruce Lee Foundation come in maybe March. And that was so powerful because so many people are Bruce Lee fans, you know. So just come to one of our events.
So veryasianfoundation.org. Michelle Lee from Today in St. Louis, thank you so much for joining me. This was a blast.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Really hope you enjoyed my interview with Michelle Lee. She's the best, isn't she? If you missed any part of the interview, make sure you go back and podcast the show. It's available on the Odyssey app or anywhere else you get your podcasts. But the Odyssey app is cool because you can pause, you can rewind, you can listen to shows that aren't even on KMOX. But the best part is that you can listen to live radio with a crystal clear signal wherever you are, as long as you have internet service, obviously. But, you know, sometimes you're in these areas where maybe you don't get a great radio signal. With the Odyssey app, you are covered. So make sure you download that if you haven't already. You know, it's so cool talking to Michelle. As I told her at the beginning of the interview, I feel like I know her because she's on my TV screen, right? And then you get to meet her and she is just as cool and just as sweet and professional and just awesome in person. And she has such a positive mindset. And that's something I want to talk about today. Maybe you recognized the song that I came in with. It's called Mind Over Matter by Young the Giant. It's probably about 15 years old now, but really like that song. It's advice that I need to take myself a lot of the times. Mind over matter. Your mindset makes such a huge difference when it comes to tackling a situation. And I really just want to share in the little time I have left that I've been trying to practice that as much as I can lately. Just, you know, if something's bothering you, if something's upsetting you, you can choose to focus on something else. You can choose to shift focus and focus on what you can control in the moment. I need to take my own advice on that a lot of the time. Lately, I've been doing it, and it's been helping me in a lot of areas. So I just kind of wanted to pass that on to you guys and remind you that you got this. Like, you can get your hands around a situation. You have more control than you think. And if you don't have control, just focus on the things that you do have control over. All right. Anyway, that's my little sermon for the week. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for listening. And I will talk to you next week. I hope you have an amazing weekend. Bye.